Welcome to my crazy life, Caroline's podcast. Yes, thank you so much for tuning in. I had hoped to do an Agony Aunt one again this week, but unfortunately, nobody decided to email me their problems. So I said, what'll I do? What'll I talk about today? Busy few days. We had the match in Cork. And also went down, had a look at the lovely venue that I'm having my next show in Cork. The Clarion in, no, not, well, it was used to be the Clarion. It's called the Clayton now in Cork City. So went in there for a look around as well. And just to July, the next crazy show. So if you haven't your tickets booked, book them. Come and see crazy. So I was thinking about it. I was like, what am I going to do with them? And probably one of the hardest times of my life was when my mum passed. So I think grief is a massive thing. And I suppose we don't talk about it enough. We kind of do a lot of it in private. We don't really talk much and tell people how we're feeling. And I think grief is different. It's all dependent on how they pass away. I think if you have someone that passes away very suddenly and they're young and there's no warning, it's a whole different type of grief. Where if you have someone then that's really old and they pass, I think the grief is different. I think the grief is it affects you differently depending on the actual this situation. Like in relation to my mum, in relation to the grief of my mum, I think I started the grieving process before she died, right? Because my mother got like a life limiting disease, motor neuron disease. And if anyone hasn't heard of it, Charlie Bird passed of it there recently. It's a really, really difficult one to accept. And one of the first things in grief is denial. And I think I remember when my mother told us about her motor neuron disease, we didn't believe her. Like, we didn't believe that she had this disease. Or we were like, no, you'd be grand. You'd be absolutely grand. We didn't want to believe it, that she had this disease, because they call it the 365-day disease, because most people, not all, a lot of people die within a year. And that was the case with my mother. She only lived a year from diagnosis. So I think I definitely feel that I started the grieving process before she died, because, we'd a year with her, but it was such a crap year. I remember when, she went to, she, her first symptom was she lost power in one of her arms. She couldn't move her arm. And we were like, this was in November. So she went up to Galway, got a few scans, and they were like, we think you had a mini stroke. So we were like, okay, you need to be careful, ma'am. There's something going on. So then it wasn't going away. And, she went to meet another doctor. He brought her in for loads of tests. And he said, on the top of the list is motor neuron disease. And of course, we were like, yeah, but he hasn't said you have it. So, I really feel guilty about not believing her. But I think it was denial. I didn't want to accept it that she had it. Nor did any of my sisters. We were like, oh, you'd be grand, Typical Irish, you'd be absolutely grand. Get over that now. You have no motor neuron disease. This woman, right, she only started living her life about 10 years before this, because she had a hard life. And we got her driving, we got her swimming, she started going to the gym. She used to, her first few holidays, she used to come on holidays with us. So it was only then she started living her life in the last 10 years. But then I also think at least she had those 10 years of life, she lived those 10 years. And she didn't, not have a horrible life the whole time. She just had a hard life and not much money. And a tough family situation at home, and it was very hard on her. Obviously, then we had a brother that had special needs, so that was another, that's a massive strain on the family. So, but yeah, I think definitely for me the denial started then. And I remember we had to go up to Beaumont. I brought her to meet this top specialist now in motor neurone disease, and at that stage her hand was closing in, and we couldn't understand why it was happening. And of course, again, denial. I remember going up to the appointment and sitting in the waiting room, and all the patients up there, their hands were closed. And that feeling, as that it was actually true that she had this disease, it was so difficult. I'm not one for praying, but she had rosary beads from Lourdes, and I said, "Can I have them for a minute, ma'am?" And I put them into my hand, and I started praying that she didn't have it. And she did. Like, you're the one, the expert. Like, thing about motor neurone disease is it's not one they can run it like a blood test. Why am I crying? This is it, lads. Grief hits you at certain times, and it doesn't at other times, Then. She just looked at her. She goes, "Yeah, you have it." That's how, they can tell by looking at you, these specialists, that she has this disease. But obviously we were still very hopeful, but also angry that it was her, why it was her. And that's part of grief, that you're very angry that she's the one that was chosen to get this after the life she had, that why. But then also in hope that still I was in still a bit of denial that she wouldn't it wouldn't actually affect her badly, and she'd actually still overcome it. And also then, sometimes motor neuron doesn't take his hold of you as fast sometimes, that you have a you can have a couple of years, but she didn't, unfortunately, and it took hold of her very fast, lads. And started basically just moving around to different parts of her body, and just so basically like it's it once it takes hold of your hand, then you lose your hand, then you lose your legs, lose your other, it just eats up your body, and you can't stop it. There's no cure for motor neuron disease, and it's there's bargaining is another thing on the grief list, and we're like, well, trying to figure out why, and maybe if she didn't do this, she'd have it. Look, she ate a lot of fish. Was it down to the fish yet? Maybe you didn't shouldn't have eaten that much fish, or looking up then links, or having babies a bit older. There was just so much you were thinking about, trying to see what caused it. Why did she get this disease and nobody else got it? Well, they do. Loads of people have it. It's called ALS in America. And if you remember the Ice Bucket Challenge years ago, that was actually for it. It was for motor neuron disease. And they raised millions. There's still no cure, lads. There's still no cure for this disease. It's just so upsetting. And then there's a couple of them that are family relation. They're linked to a family. So if you, but the one my mother had wasn't a hereditary. It just happened. No one knows why. No one can tell us why she was the one that got it. And it was just because she got this disease in the middle of COVID. So there is a lot of regret there, because they told us to keep away from them. But we had to stay away from our mother that had motor neuron disease, that didn't have much time left. But we were afraid to go into her, because if she got COVID, that was it, she was over. So we said, she's not going to have life. It was such a hard call to make for us. I just don't know if I went back, would I do the same? It's so hard to know. Our last Mother's Day was through the window of the house, and yeah, it was absolutely the hardest decision. It's now, I don't know if it was the right decision at the time or the wrong decision at the time. But all we could do was listen to the experts and say, we can't go near her because it's COVID. But then we lost that valuable time with her. We lost all that time where we could have been sitting with her. You know, when she got in, like, she ended up in the wheelchair and she couldn't walk. And, you know, thankfully there is like the council do it's like grants to extend your house. And thankfully, because like she was living, she had a single bed in the sitting room, and that's what she had. That's where she couldn't go up the stairs. Upset today. Yeah, so you know, we applied for the grant, and in fairness to the council, that's for brilliant, and they built on the extension for her, even though she didn't last long on it. But her little time left at home was valuable to her because she had the disabled toilet, she had the room where she could roll her wheelchair in, and it was absolutely amazing. I have to say that they were brilliant. She did go on a trial drug, actually. We tried a trial drug and we were determined, like, again, going back to denial, we are going to get her over this, you know. And I remember we had to go to Beaumont then every week for the trial drug. And we were like, yeah, you're going up, you're going up. But one day we tried to bring her and she just fell. And it's if you ever try and pick someone up that can't move, it's really difficult. And I remember it was about 6 o'clock in the morning and I was down to collect her, and no, we couldn't. And oh, sure, listen, you look back and say, was there behind doing the trial dog? And we were like, it might help somebody else, like, you know, who knows, it could have worked. But I remember we could not get her up. I had to get a carpet, like a mat from the sitting room, and roll her in the mat and drag her into the sitting room and try and get her up on the single bed. Like, I don't know how my back hasn't given way, lads. But it didn't. The only thing I'd say is, like, if you do have someone sick, just be there for them, because I was there, right, all the time, and I brought her to all the appointments. And I have to say, like, I don't regret any of it. I don't regret any of the hardship, any of the really hard days that we'd go through. I don't regret it. I really cherish those times with her. But yeah, it's such a debilitating disease. Then, like, with COVID, all her clinic appointments were cancelled, so she wasn't meeting anyone. So, like, her breathing started to go within, and you know, it was just like we had to do this breathing machine over the phone, Zoom call up in Dublin. And so she had to go on this machine then called the Nippy machine. And it was a breathing machine she had to wear by night, to keep her, you know, keep her throat and stuff open, like, but yeah, like, it just, I don't know, it's, look at me now, like, I think I'm over it, and then I'm bawling and crying. That's the thing with grief, you just don't know when it's going to hit you. They think then when she did die, we should be crying all the time, but you don't be crying all the time because you can't. It's not possible to cry all the time. You have to carry on. And like, when she did die, I didn't cry all the time because, as I said, I think I was going through all the stages when she was alive. Like, she did speak to us, and she was like, of several occasions that she wanted to go to Switzerland. She had enough, and she just wanted to end because it just was too painful. And that's why, you know, this new law that they're trying to pass in relation to, you know, assisted dying, like with that kind of disease, I really think it should be a possibility to end your suffering. Because I mean, when you have nothing left, you can't hold a phone, like, you can't, like, she. It's just like your life is so difficult. But then, like, I never wanted her to go early, so there's just two sides to that, you know. Like she, you know, obviously the child drug didn't work and things were just getting worse and worse for her. And she was falling a lot more. You had this alarm around her neck. She fell out the back. She started to fall more. So Milford kind of came on board then. Milford were like, oh, she's just coming in for a rest. And that was difficult because Milford is an amazing place, but like during COVID it was really difficult for people, because like when you ask anybody about going to a nursing home, like not a nursing home, like a hospice, it's so amazing because you get to sleep there, they have beds for you. But that was gone in COVID. We couldn't do that. We couldn't stay there. We had one person for 1 hour a day. That's all we were allowed in. Like, to be honest, I really cherish that time with her, because like they obviously had her washed and dressed and we could just have like a one-on-one connection. And like, I don't think I ever said to my mother, I love you, or kissed her, but every day I went to Milford, I kissed her and I hugged her and I said, I love you. And I'm just so glad I did that thing, that I didn't leave it. So like she was coming in, Milford coming up, and then she was 7 weeks down there. And they said, then they called us in, they were like, yeah, things are not looking good, lads, she's not going to. So her last wish was to come home for a night or two. So yeah, like you really, really value the hospice when they do come home, because you see the amount of work that it takes to look after somebody that has no mobility, no, can't use her arms, her legs. Like you have to feed them, you have to change them. Like it shows how difficult it is. And like I always thought about bringing her home on a full time basis, but those 2 nights that we had her home were probably the most difficult days of my life ever. I mean, there was 3 of us, and then we had nurses coming in as well, looking after her. And oh my God, it was so hard. Like, we'd have morphine, we'd be giving her all these drugs, trying to help her, and she just wanted to come home. And it was great to get her home, because obviously the grandkids couldn't go into the hospice because of COVID, because children were, they were the spreaders. But they actually, they got to see her, they got their last pictures with her. And yeah, it was really, you know, even though like we didn't want to, again, go back to the denial, we didn't want to accept she was dying. We always thought, oh, she'll pull through this. But I remember bringing her, going back down the ambulance back to the hospice, and we went in there, and I remember the feeling of relief when we got in the door. And I said to her, I said, how do you feel? And she said, I feel relieved. Because, I mean, me and my sister's amateurs. I mean, we were dragging her and pulling her, and we'd heist and osh. But I'm so glad we did that. Like, we had those 2 nights with her at home, and we had the chats and the laughs, because, like, in the end, she lost the speech then, so she couldn't talk. And it was all just sign language. But, you know, she greeted you were in the end. Like, she still had it, like... I remember we were down there, you know, so I remember they rang us on the Monday and said, no, not looking good, she's not going to last. So we all ran down, but I was just in, this is it, like you still, no matter if you're going through this, you still go to the shops, lads. Like I was just in a charity shop, and I remember she rang me bawling, crying. And I had bought, like, oh, there was a sale on the dresses, this was in August. And all dressed for Europe, all wreck dresses, thank God. Because she rang then, and we just headed straight down. So, like, we were a week down there then. We never went home. And all those bags closed in the charity shop, we never got out of them. We never changed out. Like, we just put them on. And, like, normally I'd wash stuff from the charity shop. But no choice, let's just have to throw them on, like. And I remember her in the bed, and sure, The doctors were a bit, hot down there. So I remember we were inside putting the tent on and trying to laugh with her, and next thing the hand came up out of the blanket. I was like, what's this one about? What's she doing? And I was like, you sick? Because she couldn't talk. I was, no, the wagon, she wanted 10. She wanted 10 on. So she wanted to be 10 going into the grave. So she did. So that's the kind of woman she was. She loved her style. She loved her clothes. And she wasn't going into that ground looking pale. Like, she wanted the body 10 on. So we put the 10 on her. And I remember the lovely people in the hospice, they come in and do their nails. And I remember my mother had picked out luminous yellow nails. And the nail woman came out and she's asked for, I said, whatever she wants. So she went down into that coffin with luminous yellow nails. And she had 10. Yeah, she did. So I think it was the Friday. Yeah, Friday she passed then. She was. They wanted to change her, and then next thing they were in, she was just gasping, and she just took the last breath, and she was gone. And just suppose we didn't really sit with her that long because her biggest thing was that she wanted to go home that night. She didn't want to stay in a mortuary. And because of COVID, you couldn't do the whole mortuary thing or anything like that. You couldn't really have a funeral, like. So that was the big thing for us. Well, it was a big thing getting a dress. So she wanted to wear something colourful. So I remember I was on a FaceTime call with my husband above. He was above in Carrigdon, and he was picking out a dress for her, and we were on it. And he picked the most beautiful peach dress for her because she wanted to look good. And the only thing is, we forgot the knickers and the bra. So I'm sorry, ma'am. You didn't go out with any bra or knickers on you. For a coat, no knickers. But we got her home that night, and we had 2 nights with her then. And I did her makeup, of course. And she was like the queen inside there. We even had like fake. She all she ever wanted in her life was a big diamond. She never bought for herself, which is the biggest regret she had. But we got a fake one anyway and put it on her, and she had it in, and sure she was like now, the queen's aunt inside. And we gave her a great send off, and I miss her every day. And I wish she was still here with me, because now if she was inside in the middle of this, lads. She would be now. I'd say she'd have pushed me off at this stage. She'd have more followers than me. That's the kind of lady she was. She was gas. She loved the social media. She just loved everything to do with she loved clothes, makeup. I didn't think this was going to be a cry fest, lads. So I'm so sorry about that. But I just wanted to talk about grief, and it's just so different. And it, like I said, I felt my grief started that year before she died. And then when she did die, I think I was at a different stage. Like I was more accept. I was more accept. I accepted it more that she was gone, because I think I've gone through them all. So. Like that, people that have lost people, they can still have a laugh. They can still it doesn't mean you to just stop, but then you have moments of it. Like if her song came on now, I'd start crying. If but then her anniversary, I mightn't cry at all. Easter for us, because she's jobs do Easter egg hunts for the kids. That's when I get emotional over her. Like 3.5 years now since she passed, and I'm still bawling. But like that now, I mightn't cry again for 6 months. So it's so weird. It just deals with, everyone has a different approach to it. No one has the same journey of grief. And all you can do is support someone, be there and say, listen, if they might just want to cry or rant, and just be there for them, and don't judge them. Don't judge them for having a laugh for a good time, because it's just not, you're entitled to it. You can still enjoy life and go on holidays and still be upset. Like, I remember my first holiday without, when she wasn't alive, I found that really difficult because she used to always text me and go, "How's the holiday?" And I wasn't getting the messages, and that really affected me in my holidays in the sense that I really missed her. But then, like, you could just, it's all time is a healer, lads. But sure, time is a healer. Look, she's still crying. Anyway, that's enough for me bawling, lads. You want me to do an agony aunt email, crazyagonyaunt@gmail.com for next week. Other than that, I hope I'm having Gian floods of tears. And you know what? It's good to cry, and it's good to get all that out, all that emotion out. Because you know, it sometimes is lying there for a while, and you have to do it because it's good to get it out of your system, and you can move on then. And then I might cry again tomorrow, or I might cry again for a month. Nobody knows. And I do, even with my own kids now, I'm like, in a sense, I hope, I don't want them to be that much in love with me because I don't want them to go through it. It's awful, isn't it? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm afraid what they'll be like about me when I'm gone, and I hope it won't be the same, but it's going to be the same. Oh, isn't it? Go down a rabbit hole here now. Oh my God. Crazy is crazy today. Right, I need to go. Thanks for listening, everybody.